Hi, attainable listeners. Today, we're talking with Julia Mandy, who tells us about her winding journey from the hospitality industry to an indoor hydroponics startup to advocating for and developing localized ecosystems in Los Angeles to her next adventure, which I'll let her tell you about. Julia shares her evolved philosophy about regeneration, regenerative farming practices, and how our communities can hopefully one day achieve a sustaining world with a shift in how we think more local and a shift in how we act towards one another. Are you ready to get started? I sure am. Let's go. Julia?
Hi, how are you?
I'm glad we're chatting. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
Julia, you've had a very nonlinear journey that brings you to where you are today here in LA. Would you give us just a quick snapshot into your past and how that journey has shaped your interests, who you are, and what you're working on today?
I remember sitting at a snowy window at my old job in New York, and I was looking out the window. It was white everywhere. And it was really beautiful, and I just was itching to get out of the cold, and I was working in hospitality, and I just wanted to shake up and change, and I was Googling, and I found this Facebook group in Los Angeles called From Waste to Food, and there was a little cartoon logo of a guy on a bicycle collecting food waste, and I thought, you know, this is really what is essential in our systems. Local systems of collecting food waste, building healthy soils, having local infrastructure to be able to function in a more sustainable way. And so I emailed the Facebook group, didn't really get a response. And I already knew that I wanted to move out to Los Angeles, came out here. And the first job I had was at a restaurant. And I saw how much food waste there was. And to be very frank, the restaurant wasn't even recycling, and I was really confused by it. And then I started to learn about the recycling laws and how they weren't really in effect. And there was a lot of greening that LA had to go through compared to San Francisco and even San Diego. And I started to get involved with the LA Food Policy Council and learning a little bit more. I ended up leaving the hospitality industry, which it's an industry that I adore, but it's very extractive. There's a lot of expectations to be working really long hours, always having that smile on, always having, you know, that pep in your step. And it was really exhausting, especially not having friends and family. And so I ended up working in an indoor hydroponic controlled environment agriculture startup. We were growing lettuces and leafy greens. And I thought, well, is this the future? You're using a lot less water, but you're importing a lot of fertilizers, even though it's organic. And I was really curious, so I stepped into that world. And as I was stepping into this world, I was simultaneously learning about soil health. And I was learning about how building soil health is an incredible solution towards, well, at the time, I thought reversing climate change, because you're able to capture carbon into the soil, store it in the ground. You know, this is nature's technology. And so there's this major juxtaposition in my life where I'm working in controlled environment agriculture without any soil. And then I'm learning about soil. And at the same time, I started volunteering with LA Compost. And that's when I really just started to understand that me personally, I need to be working with the land and in soil and around that and moving more towards that direction than what I was working in, which was a shipping container with lights that I felt very like confined and contained in. And it felt way more expansive to be turning a compost pile on the weekends volunteering. And so I started speaking with Michael Martinez, who's the founder of LA Compost. And we found a way to work together, and I came on board as the director of development. Didn't have any fundraising background, but I really believed in the importance of composting, both from taking food waste out of landfill, but also applying compost to our land to develop healthy soils. And so I've been working at LA Compost for 2 years. And just to clarify, from waste to food is LA Compost. That was the first name. And it was Michael, and he had a table at the farmer's market. And it's evolved into LA Compost, which is now a decentralized network of over 33 compost hubs, diverting over 1 million pounds of food scraps a year, helping to bring access and soil education to LA residents. And what we do is build the local infrastructure, including training people how to manage their own compost systems and a larger network of community hubs and regional hubs throughout LA County.
And we'll get into what your next steps and moves are after LA Compost in a little bit. But so you're in New York. It's, is it 2017?
No, this was 2015.
15. Okay. It's so interesting because you think of California as being such a leader in recycling and greening as a state. That's one thing that when I first moved to LA was really surprised at how slow moving a lot of the systems and mandates were.
On the flip side of that, what I also learned was that there's a underground market of entrepreneurs, if you will, who are taking recycling into their own hands. And so there's a lot of illegal recycling happening. And I found that really interesting to see the spirit of Los Angeles, where there's dumpster diving to collect recyclables. And it was almost like the wild, wild west of letting all this happen. I think maybe that, I don't know how that affected policy, but I know that now with mandates, there are a lot of people in Los Angeles who were relying on that, who maybe don't have that source. So I just want to throw that in there because it's not something I know a whole lot about, but I was exposed to that. And I found it really curious because it's part of how LA operates.
I don't want to say scrappy, but people feel empowered when they don't have a service or they see something that needs to be different. So instead of waiting for change to happen, they create that change. And I feel a lot of that here. And I love that you say underground movement. It is very much here and you need to look for it, but it is very much here.
Yeah. And it's also pulled from necessity. People need to find a way to make a living. And so collecting recyclables and going to Vernon to recycle and get that cash. It operates right out of necessity. And so that speaks to both the creativity and the need of humans.
What has the last 4 years really learning about the industry and meeting different people, what are you now most interested in around, well, I guess I'll just leave it there. What are you most interested in now? How has the last 4 years really helped shape that interest and newfound passion?
I'm really interested in reshaping the narrative around climate justice to include the vision of abundance. I think years ago when I first read James Hansen's book, Storms of My Grandchildren, and started to dive into understanding how these injustices towards our climate are affecting our individual lives, I had a lot of fear and anger. And then working in indoor hydroponics, there's this mindset of scarcity, like we don't have enough of resources, which is very true. But if we're investing into our land, and if we're living in a more regenerative way, instead of an extractive way, literally what happens in ecosystems is that the carrying capacity increases over time. And so that allows for more abundance. And it's also very nostalgic for me because I grew up in Zimbabwe and I remember having what seemed to me as a young kid as a large vegetable patch. I was probably smaller now thinking about it than it actually was, but just being able to sit in that vegetable patch and pull out a carrot and eat it straight from the ground or sit under an avocado tree that was enormous and just pick something right off the tree and live in this abundance of, healthy air and healthy food. And also what comes from that is really good tasting food. And I got exposed to that again when I was working in New York and working with restaurants that were pretty much exclusively buying their produce from farmers who were investing into soil health and therefore the produce tastes better. It has more nutritional value, but really the flavor is abundant and present. And we would see the difference between, you know, this asparagus that was grown in California and shipped across the country, you know, spends that time frozen in a truck versus the asparagus that's grown in the fields just outside, where there's very intentional planting in order for that asparagus to get that nutritional value that it needs. And now there's, when you go to the supermarket, so many items are watered down. I think spinach is the biggest one that you can just go out to your supermarket and get a bag of spinach versus going to a farmer's market and tasting spinach from a farmer. And it is two different things. And so I'm always drawn to delicious things. And I want that abundance in my life. But for a long time, I was mostly approaching my work from, this isn't possible. Like we need to change this, instead of really shifting how I'm thinking of, well, let's live what I think could be possible. And that's what I see at LA Compost and being connected to urban farms and neighboring farms and doing pop-up events where we're just celebrating that local can be abundant and we don't have to have the scarcity mindset. So I'm really interested to see how that grows, because it's still a fairly new thing for me to trust that that is a possibility in our future. And I still can get really bogged down by the doom and gloom of climate change or food scarcity and these things. But there's a lot of solutions, and they just need to be brought into fruition or be exposed. And there's a lot of positivity in the climate world that we see, but it might not hit the news as much because it's not as grabby.
Tell us what's up next for you and where you're going to be focusing your time after LA Compost.
I was born in New York and then raised in Zimbabwe. My father's family found their way there by way of Lithuania. When I was, you know, 1.5 years old, I moved to Zimbabwe and to Harare, the capital city, and grew up there for the first 10 years of my life. My nostalgia towards it is strong. I felt very abundant and diverse and beautiful. And I moved to America when I was 10, and then somehow found my way really interested in agriculture and food. I think that also comes from my mom being a caterer and an amazing chef and just being really attracted to delicious food. So I decided that I wanted to go back to Zimbabwe quite a few years ago, but I just didn't know how or when. And there's a huge economic collapse, and I just didn't know how I was going to get back there. And about 10 years ago, I watched a TED talk by Alan Savory where he talks about desertification, and he has this onus of needing to right a wrong that he did in the 1970s in attempts to help farmers and farmland, but the result was him culling about 40,000 elephants. And living with that burden, he knew that it was his life's work to find a different solution on how to help livestock managers build up their herds for their livelihood, but also for the ecological health. And so I watched this TED talk, and I was working in restaurants, and I just kept following this narrative around soil health. And it got to the point where I was connecting with people from the Savory Institute, which is based in Colorado, but a network of hubs across the globe. There's the Africa Center for Holistic Management in Zimbabwe. And so I decided to do a volunteer trip. And so I'm going to take some time off to go visit that land and then connect with other farmers and people that I've been learning about along the way, and just show up and see what's happening and offer a hand and be part of their farming practices and learn in this experiential way, and then see where it goes from there.
That's amazing. That is going to be such an adventure. I cannot wait to follow along and not only what you learn, but also what edge and what curiosities and further projects come out of that. When you think about solutions to climate change and thinking local and buying local, there's so many services set up, but
they're not always in place. And so this is how my brain works, balancing like the doom and gloom of climate and the like beauty of abundance is in the case of a natural disaster or, you know, a major earthquake or something that happens, or just the changing in climate patterns that are going to make it more challenging for food to be shipped across oceans. In the face of that world, how can we be more reliant on local systems? And if those systems don't exist, and you're in an area where your food source is based on trucking things in from a really far away place, not only is that contributing to emissions, but you don't have that resiliency from a local level. And so, unfortunately, I come from that place of fear, or I've had that fear for so long that that's how my brain is operating and thinking, that now I'm like, oh, well, you know, shift your own narrative to see that you can have these abundant local structures that are actually really joyful, and that being the motivation for moving forward to why I want to do this work.
I want to talk about, if any of us have gone to a farmer's market and seeing produce there, it is so different than the produce we see in a big grocery store like Avon's, Ralph's, or I think Target has produce now. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about the farming industry. So a small farmer, local farmer, versus the farming industry and farming practices, how do they differ and what are different methods used?
So, you know, each farmer is going to use different practices. In the industrial farming complex, there's a huge dependency on chemical fertilizers, both because the expectation is to have high yields, and expecting that the only way to get high yields is, you know, to keep extracting from the soil instead of looking at the overall health of a system and looking at the soil health as being the indicator of success for a farm. So usually what happens with smaller farming practices, regenerative farming practices, is that you're looking at the soil health as being the indicator for success, and therefore everything else in the system can function without needing external inputs. So you're having things like composting do help to bring the nutrients back into the soil, but also crop rotation and the use of cover crops. And so you start to mitigate this whole ecosystem from within its own boundaries, instead of having some sort of single monocrop farming where you're just extracting the same thing and planting the same thing, and you're never actually replenishing the soil that things are grown from. You know, those are the major differences between industrial farming, that's an extractive practice, and regenerative farming, where you're looking at the whole ecosystem and all of the variables involved, and really letting that ecosystem thrive and becoming more of a steward to the land. And that's the thing that creates abundance. I was working at a restaurant that was attached to a farm in New York, and had a symbiotic relationship with the farmers. And I recall going on a tour with the chef where he said that the amount that they can produce per square mile is comparable to the yields of a monocrop farm because of the diversity of things that they're growing on that property. They're not just growing one crop, but they're making use of different parts and all areas, and growing vines on top for shade covering. I think those vines at the time were hops. And so you're bringing in multiple things to work in the system instead of just growing cornfields and taking that one thing for yield to put into a system.
So industrial farming, how is that practice shaping the future of soil health? And does that affect the quality and nutrients of the food that they produce?
Absolutely. I mean, if you're going to have, you know, cuts and scrapes on your skin, and you're just going to sort of cover them up with Band-Aids without really allowing your body, the health of your body and your immune system to rebuild, that's sort of how the soil health works. So if you're just focusing on the surface layer, and you're also breaking up all of the actual structure of the soil, like the fungal structure, if you're messing with that and you keep tilling through that topsoil is going to be completely depleted, and it's going to become void of life. And so what you have to do is build your farming practices around protecting that layer, and when in need, applying things like compost or other practices, soil amendments that will reinvigorate the soil life and then build the soil structure so that it can be able to sequester carbon. It can hold more water. The soil itself becomes stronger like a sponge. And so you're able to actually store all the things that are needed for the next plant life to grow, as opposed to sort of ripping the top out of it and breaking things up and constantly tilling and leaving it bare and exposed and not letting it be in the best condition that it needs to be.
Talking about sequestering carbon and soil really being a sponge and helping the earth cleanse and pull a lot of these emissions that we're producing out of the air, it sounds like right now those industrial practices are not allowing as much carbon, if not no carbon, to be absorbed. That could be a very helpful thing for the earth and for us as we're trying to slow down climate change, but it right now it's not able to because of our practices.
Yeah, that's exactly true. Conventional farming not only has negative impact on the environment because of the use of chemical fertilizers and just the process of making those fertilizers, also then the missed opportunity of sequestering carbon on a biological level. White oak pastures, which is on the East Coast, I believe in Georgia, they're a regenerative cattle farm. And they recently did a study on their land where conventional beef farming releases about 33 net total emissions per pound, where their regenerative farming of beef pastures is actually sequestering 3.5 emissions per pound. So in the way and the practices that they're grazing their cattle, they're doing that to optimize soil health, to make sure that the grasslands are able to regenerate themselves. And through that practice, the grass then that is regenerating is capturing more CO2, storing it into the soils. And so you're capturing carbon emissions instead of just releasing them. And so that was a small study to prove how regenerative farming can help to reverse climate change. I'm apprehensive to say reverse because we've come a little bit too far from that to go back to where we were. I think there's a great need to balance out our carbon emissions, but we're still going to see major effects because we're already nearing that tipping point.
I love learning that case study. It's such a popular action right now is to eat less meat, less red meat. And instead of pointing the finger or discussing the practices around red meat production and produce production, and really what I'm gathering from what you're saying is that if we had more sustainable practices, then a lot of this wouldn't necessarily be as much of an impeding issue.
The word sustaining, we're not ready to use that word yet because our topsoils are depleted. And if we were to sustain where we are now, it's not good enough for our ecosystems to thrive. And so we do need to shift towards regenerative practices, which are different from sustainable. And we're farmers that have been practicing regenerative practices know the variables that they need to work towards, but there's no overseeing like certification around it. And so that is all happening now as we're learning that regenerative practices are more important to invest into our land in order to sequester carbon and increase biodiversity and increase water retention and things like that. Also note that I haven't done any large-scale farming. That's the next step that I'm interested to take because I'm not a farmer, but I am a farmer advocate and I've done apprenticeships with farms. But I'm really interested in especially seeing how we're grazing cattle and how we're raising animals for meat and fibers. That's sort of the next step that I'm taking. And that's why I'm going to Zimbabwe at the Africa Center for Holistic Management, which is an Alan Savory hub, to learn and to see how they're grazing their cattle in this regenerative way. Because living in Los Angeles, I'm not exposed to that as much. And although people are doing this throughout California, I have the pull to go back to the land that I was raised in.
Putting all this together, what needs to happen now to make real change happen? You're embarking on this trip and expanding your learning and understanding of what's happening. But, you know, what can I do? What can our listeners do to help and either educate themselves or take action today?
Well, I think something that everyone can do is become more aware of the life cycle of the items that they're purchasing and bringing into their life. And that's everywhere from electronics to food to clothing. I wouldn't try to do all of it at once. I think that's too daunting. But starting with food, understanding how that food got into your hands, who was involved, what was involved, did it have to be trucked over? Was it frozen? Is it directly coming from a farmer? Where's it going to go when you're done with it? Just being curious about the whole life cycle, because, you know, everything stays within this planet. Nothing ever goes out of sight, out of mind. Although we imagine it does, because it's easier to live that way. But when you have a more mindful practice of bringing clothing into your life, where you know how the fibers were sourced and that that was coming from regeneratively farmed sheep, you know, you expose yourself into a world where you're living with your resources and you're not just extracting resources. That mindfulness will be the first step to take you into actually practicing behaviors that are, I'm going to use the word sustainable, that are more sustainable or eco-friendly. Composting is one of the best things that you can do just in your household, because when food does go into the landfill, it produces methane, which is a greenhouse gas that's extremely harmful to the environment. And we really see what your 7 pounds a week diverted from landfill can actually make a huge difference. And that's what we did at LA Compost by setting up these compost hubs to drop off at, or farmers market locations where you can drop your food scraps at. Just making that simple switch is really helping to better the environment. Of course, we want to have it be easy and make it convenient for people. But a lot of the time, if you're going to do something that's just a little bit inconvenient, the reward is huge. When people go to the farmer's market and they're dropping off their food scraps, they're then buying their food directly from the farmer there. And there's a whole culture around that. I feel so fortunate to be part of it, because every time I go to the farmer's market that I go to, I run into friends, and it's this social discourse, and it's fulfilling in so many ways. That if I were to just, if we could in LA right now, just throw it in the green bin, I wouldn't even have that incentive to go to the market to, you know, to have that culture, of course, to purchase my food too, but that works both ways.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Taking those little extra steps that may seem at first inconvenient, but really seeing that there's this ocean of opportunity and connection and community on the other side, and it then becomes part of your well-being.
Yeah, you see yourself as being part of the larger ecosystem, as opposed to you as an individual just sort of using your stuff and throwing it away. How can we work in tandem with these systems? And it's the same thing when you're making your purchases. I don't think we're just going to completely stop capitalism and stop buying things. We wouldn't necessarily want to do that, because there are people making really amazing things, craftsmen, and being intentional with how they're sourcing the materials that they're using. And so just investing your money and your time into the things that you value make you part of the system, and you work alongside of it. To me personally, that makes me feel way more connected than sort of blindly purchasing something online. But to each his own, you know. Yeah. Some people are really way more comfortable with just a click online. And I think that that's where systemic change also needs to happen, and the back end of work to make sure that there's policy to make sure that the municipal agencies are also working to create sustainable futures. And it's not only reliant on individuals, but it's a balance of both.
It is putting some of the onus on us as consumers and knowing what that life cycle of that product is. And we have so many choices now. There's 6 of the same product, not the same product, but 6 brands producing a similar product. And for us to really understand where it comes from, what it's made from, is so important, because then we can make a conscious decision and make a decision, hopefully, that we want a product that is a better for the environment, lower carbon impact, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. And it tends to bring more joy into your life if you care about it, and then if you care for it. When I travel and when I purchase things that are made in these countries that I'm traveling in, there's a real sense of like pride, not only that I'm investing in this handmade crafted bag or whatever it is from a new place and that the resources come from there, but then the longevity of it, because I'm caring for it, is expanded and it brings me more joy. I don't need to be part of this disposable economy. I can bring things in, really care for them, keep them. And then when I'm done with them, it's either that I'm giving it away to someone else, or I'm reselling it, or I've really used it to its max, you know, either trying to compost it or trying to recycle it, or just being aware of how it's going to break down in the system again.
Also, you said it earlier that we're so good at taking away our trash and not having it be, you know, around. We're good at that, but almost to a fault, where we really, if we don't like something or if we can't reuse something, it's so quickly taken away and we don't have to think about it again.
Yeah. I see that translated a lot into, you know, how we treat others as well, because, you know, if how we're treating our things can sometimes also, if you're going to have that kind of disposal way of, okay, well, I'm done with this, it's someone else's problem. You know, I see that happening in the way humans treat each other. And when you kind of shift into really valuing and understanding the value of people and the value of all of your things, there's a lot more care that's involved. And I find that way more expansive than just toss and next.
Absolutely. And yeah, and you said earlier, the, you know, investment in and understanding and respect for and valuing. Mm-hmm. Just saying those words, it makes your heart happy.
Yeah.
Purpose. Where can our listeners, if they want to follow along, where can they find you?
You can find me on juliamandy.space. It's a website that I don't currently have a blog about my Zimbabwe trip. I'm not exactly sure how I want to document the trip itself. But if you want to support what I'm doing and contribute to Zimbabwean farmers, I've started a Supportful campaign. So you can go to www.supportful.com/Zimbabwe and try to raise some money to bring to the farmers that I'll be working with.
That is awesome. Okay, I'll put that in the show notes. So if anyone wants to support you, I will go check that out as well. That's great.
Great, thanks.
Awesome, Julia. Thank you so much. I love hearing your journey. It's so encouraging and empowering.
Thank you, Amy. It was such a pleasure speaking with you.
Bye, Julia.
Bye.
Julia leaves us with meaning and deep perspective as she works to reshape the narrative around climate justice to include abundance. She encourages us to live the meaningful life that we want to now, instead of waiting for it to evolve. She encourages us to be an active part in our local community and to care about the things we bring into our lives, because the more connected we become, the more we understand how everything, the food we eat, the clothes we buy, the local craftsmen and artisans we support, everything in our ecosystems is fully interconnected. As Julia embarks on a new journey to learn about holistic land management and rebuilding soil health from local farmers in Zimbabwe, we wish her the most abundant and full experience. If you want to help Julia and the local farmers she is volunteering her time to, please visit her Supportful page in the show notes to donate. Also, since my conversation with Julia, I've seen the documentary, The Biggest Little Farm. It showcases regenerative farming practices on a 200-acre farm outside of LA, and the story shows how a once harsh farm is able to transform into a thriving and sustainable place, just like Julia talks to us about. It is an incredible story. I recommend everyone see it if you haven't already. So, this week, let's follow Julia's advice and focus on understanding the life cycle of each new thing we bring into our lives. And let's continue to break bad habits together.